Welcome back. Homework number two was due just before class day. Any comments or questions on homework two? Okay, great. Too easy. Next one will be harder. I won't punish you. I'm just kidding. Last class, we were beginning to look into some of the non-idealities of switching to MOSFET devices. And we looked first at gate charge and the losses associated with just turning the gate on and off independent of what circuit it's in. Okay. And these were losses that are going to be supplied from the gate driver power supply, depending on how you're doing your assessment, may not even impact your efficiency. Okay. Real system, eventually these are real losses, and that somehow impacts your efficiency, particularly on research tasks. If you're just measuring the power coming into the input, the power going out of the output, you may not see these losses. You had a problem related to these on your homework. You looked at specific case where these could become significant and impact the way you design things. There was a comment after class last time that as I thought about it, I agree with, which is that this should be in equals approximately here because of the nonlinearity of this equivalent capacitance. It's not exactly half the energy lost during the turn on and half dissipated. Doesn't impact the eventual solution, though this is correct. Still, that total charge is supplied from VDR and it is all eventually lost, but was a valid comment that this is not exactly a half. Shouldn't impact anything. Okay, and then we moved on and we started to talk about overlap times in contrast with gate charge losses. Overlap losses are going to show up in your power stage. These are dissipated drain to source of the MOSFET. And overlap losses have to do with how this gate charge curve in combination with the device operating modes, the transfer characteristic of the MOSFET influence switching behaviors. Okay. So we looked at this gate charge curve and we said, okay, during a turn on transition, we're going to have a few different stages. In the initial stage here, as we bring gate source voltage from zero up to this VM, we're really just charging CGS. During this Miller plateau, our gate driver is charging CGD. You see that because the gate to source voltage remains constant while charge is still flowing, while I still have current going into the gate, because all of that current is going up through CGD. This is the time where we bring the voltage down on the device. We're actually doing our voltage switching here. And then after that, for the remainder, we're charging CGS again. And sometimes in data sheet tables, you'll see this QG split out into multiple things. They might give you QG itself is meant as the total charge at some voltage. They might give you a couple of those. Also give you things like QGD, which is the total charge during this time. Depends on what voltage you're switching. Might give you different segments of this as QGS1 or QGS2. So this curve describes all of it. So that behavior then translates into switching waveforms, which we sketched out last time, going through interval by interval. This was the turn on of M2. As we looked at this, assuming we are in a clamped type switching where prior to turn on of M2, all of IL is going through the high side diode, clamping V switch at the DC bus. What happens is we begin turning on the gate, nothing happens until we reach threshold, because this device stays in cutoff. Once we reach the threshold and go V on it, this device is going to pop into the active SAT region because it still has a big voltage across it, prevents it from going into triode, and it's going to behave as kind of a voltage controlled current source according to the forward transconductance of the device, increasing the gate voltage until I've taken over all of the inductor current once the channel current through this MOSFET is all of the inductor current, that means I've finally removed all current from the diode. It can become reverse biased and shut off. And at that point, I can begin collapsing this BDS voltage, no longer clamped. Doing so happens as I'm charging that CGD capacitance. And this, when we're just looking at QG and the transfer characteristic, charging that CGD capacitance is actually what controls the rate at which this voltage falls. Doing so, this interval will continue long enough for me to bring the VDS voltage all the way down to zero, at which point I can finish the interval, increase my VGS voltage. At this point, all I'm doing is slightly decreasing the on resistance because I've already made it over into the triode ohmic region. I'm just having a minor decrease. Like zoomed in here, this voltage would drop very slightly because the on resistance is decreasing with a slightly higher gate voltage. Okay. And we had just gotten here at the end of class. We ran out of time. The next thing I want to do with this is, of course, look at what this power loss is that results from this transition. It said, really right here, between when the current starts rising and when the voltage finishes falling, I have simultaneous drain to source voltage and current. That indicates minimum energy. Right now, I'm not looking at any sort of capacitance, so I have no energy storage, so all that energy is going to be energy loss. So I can plot on any of these axes PDS, IDS times VDS. And that's going to look like zero during this first interval because I have zero current. In the second interval, it's going to be the product of a constant VDC and a ramping up IDS. Ramp up to a peak here, which has value simultaneously IL and VDC. This peak will be IL times VDC. And then during this interval three, I'm going to hold IL constant, ramp down VDS, hold IDS constant, excuse me, ramp down VDS. We get something that looks like this. And then after the end of this, because of zero VDS, I'll stick at zero. That's my instantaneous power loss. If I want to calculate something like an average power loss over a switching period, what I'm going to do is integrate this triangle to get a total energy, multiply by FS to get the total power loss, because it happens once per period during the turn on transition. So if I integrate this thing, area here is the area of a triangle. Now the area of a triangle is 1/2 base times height. So we'll call E energy due to overlap loss equal to 1/2 the base. I need to define here. I'm going to call this time T overlap, which is just the sum of the length of intervals 2 and 3. Look at in a second. The height is ILVDC. And this results in a power loss, which is E overlap times FS. Looks like, right, this 1/2 ILVDC T overlap over TS. Okay, we call this overlap loss. It's a term I've been throwing out. Called that because this is pretty simply calculated just from the overlap of current and voltage on the MOSFET during switching. Current rise first, voltage fall second, so there's some overlap in these two, whereas ideally we'd like there to be no overlap. It's either on or off. Okay. So IL, VDC are my steady state operating conditions. The one here that's potentially difficult to calculate is T overlap. T overlap is really dictated by my gate driver, how long it takes me to get through these two intervals, which is how long it takes to get from the threshold through the end of this Miller plateau. The overlap is the amount of time taken here. So if I hop back again to my gate charge curve, T overlap is the amount of time it takes me to get from this threshold to here. During that, I need to supply total charge. I'll just call Q overlap. However much charge I needed to get from when I hit threshold to here, looks like this about 3 to 10, so about 7 nanocoulombs. So depending on how hard I drive the gate, I can do this in a different amount of time. General current is charge per second. So I can look at this in nanocoulombs and say Q is, if I have a gate current of 1 amp, then my nanocoulombs are nanoseconds, applying 1 coulomb per second. So it'd take me 7 nanoseconds to supply 7 nanocoulombs with 1 amp of current. That is a perhaps simplification, because in reality, I'm likely not driving with a constant current source. I'm driving with something that looks like this here, where I have an RC type circuit during turn on. So calculating actual RC dynamics would be more accurate. Often, we can assume it's more or less a constant current. The reason is that during this overlap time, I have very little variation in the voltage VGF. If I'm driving this thing with 15 volts, 15 minus 5 and 15 minus 3 over R are pretty close. And the majority of it is at 5 volts. I've got a little bit happening here, but the majority of my charge is supplied during this time. And during that time, even through an RC circuit, it is a constant current. My V drive is whatever voltage. My VGS is locked at a constant voltage. So I've got a constant voltage across my gate drive resistance, constant current. Okay. So typically, make this calculation simple, fine to just assume during this time, you have a constant current, which is V drive minus VM over the series resistance. So I can get that overlap time, knowing my charge and knowing the current during the overlap time itself. And that will allow me to calculate this E overlap, eventually my P overlap. Okay. Questions on that? So what can I do about this loss? Well, IL and VDC, I probably can't do much about. That's whatever my input, output voltage, and power are, you know, dictate that. Subject to changing topologies, doing something else. Okay. T overlap over TS. Okay. I can switch slower, get my TS up to reduce this loss. In the opposite direction we're going. T overlap, I can reduce by driving harder, getting a gate driver with a higher drive current, smaller series resistance to get this T overlap down as much as I can. Doing so will also be calculated the same, just shrink the amount of time here. We'll give some kind of qualitative comments on the limitations of that at the end of this discussion. To a limited extent, driving harder and switching faster is beneficial and will reduce this loss proportional to that T overlap time. The only other option, this is where we'll go in the course, is changing the dynamics during switching. This is what the overlap losses look like in this clamped inductive load situation, okay? Where I have the entire inductor current forward biasing a diode, and I'm turning on this device, clamp voltage across the bridge, and with current forward biasing that diode. If current isn't forward biasing that diode when I try to turn this on, then I don't have to get the diode off. I don't have to take over the current. I won't have this overlap loss. Okay. As it is. Okay. We'll go into more detail on that shortly. So this slide, this GFS, we don't need to use it in the calculation, but dictating the kind of rate here at which the inductor current is taken over and what my eventual VM voltage will be. That is using the same plot. If I just take points at a given VDS voltage and take the points on these different curves, these are 4.5, 5, 5.56. Those points are here, replotted just as gate source voltage versus drain current. This is a more or less linear relationship where the slope of this is GFS, the transconductance of the device. If you have a plot of ID versus VGS, you can take the slope of that in the active sat region. Okay. Side comment. So here, just to validate these waveforms we sketched, I'm going to do an example simulation. An LT splice, it's got some arbitrary device that I've defined down here as a test MOSFET. What I did was I pulled out, set my CGD equal to zero, and my CGS equal to zero, and then my CDS is some extremely small value to make sure it converges, and then put CGD and CGS external so I can look at the current in those. So functionally same thing as having them in the MOSFET, I just pulled them out so that I can look at those currents individually. And then this switching waveform is going to be with some example numbers, just what we looked at. I've got a constant VDC, 300 volts, a high side diode. My IL is 1 amp, and this source just emulates my gate driver. Got 1 amp as long as the gate voltage is less than 10 volts. I initialize to zero, so I'm going to look at just the turn-on transition. I'm going to drive with a constant 1 amp until it's on. Okay. I look at the waveforms here. My VGS waveform looks as expected. It has this long, flat Miller plateau. And eventually continues up to my drive voltage of 10 volts. I see with my current and voltage waveforms, I have current rise first. Once current reaches 1 amp, with high side diode can shut off, then the voltage begins to drop. When I look at current through the, where the gate current goes, I've got, my colors didn't quite match up, it should have been green. My IGS capacitor, my CGS capacitor takes the full gate current of 1 amp until I reach this Miller plateau. Then the GS current drops to zero. All of the current's going through the gate to drain capacitance through this Miller plateau. At the end of that, more or less zero current in the gate to drain capacitor, all the current going into CGS to bring the gate to source voltage up. So matches the dynamics expected during this transition. Okay. So that's the turn on transition. The turn off transition, there is a bit more nuance to, in that if I look at this same device, M2, and I want to turn it off, and looking at my order here, VGS, IDS, VDS, VGS is initially high. IDS should be high, VDS initially low. So my M2 is on. And I'm going to begin driving VGS low in order to turn this thing off. Okay. The difference in the turn-off transition fundamentally is that I don't have the same clamp type behavior necessarily. Okay. So at the start of the transition, the entire inductor current is flowing through the device that I'm turning off. Nothing about this device's body diode is coming into play right now. It's not clamping voltage. This thing is basically just gone entirely. It's having no effect on this transition initially. And so what happens depends on really some details of the device itself. But for the moment, with the assumptions we've been working under, which are that I have this QG gate charge and I have the transfer characteristics of the device, under that paradigm, the behavior of this is going to be just the inverse of what we saw in the turn-on transition. It's going to do the exact same steps, just in reverse. What can happen as I begin turning it off, gate-to-source voltage is going to drop until it hits such a voltage, Vm, that this device transitions into the active stat region. I'm going to see almost no change, just a slight rise in on resistance. It'll continue conducting the inductor current. Voltage will stay small. See some millivolts type rise in it, but nothing significant on the scale of zero to VDC. Once I hit this VM voltage, I'm going to again be clamped, and the transition in my VDS voltage is going to be dictated by gate driver supplying charge to that CDS. So here, I'll see a rise in voltage. At the end of this interval, voltage will have risen, the current still going through the device. After that, I can bring the voltage down until the threshold, which will take the current down in saturation until I hit zero. VDC. So, no difference at all, just the mirror of the waveforms we had during the turn-on transition. If that's the case, P overlap during the turn-off transition is equal to P overlap during the turn-on transition, which is what we just derived, 1/2 VDC IL P overlap over TS. Okay, if I look on my transfer characteristic, height was I drawn this at before, roughly 10 amps. I'm starting here, and I will, just to have them correspond, I'm going to label these in reverse order. I'm starting here, interval 4. During that, I am decreasing VGS, having no change in current, and only a tiny change in voltage. I'm staying in this triode ohmic region. Not until I hit this boundary with active sat that I go into interval 3. There, I have clamped VGS voltage, my current staying the same, but my voltage is dropping, or excuse me, rising, which will be this type of behavior. At interval 2, drop the voltage. And in 1, I'm sitting here in cutoff. Again, this is bad. This is transitioning me through a lossy region of the device operation where I'm out in active sat with big voltage, big current. Now, why did we have that type of trajectory here? Well, as I begin turning on the device, diode's clamping the voltage, so I'm stuck on a vertical line here. Can't change the drain to source voltage until I get up to this current, until I take over the inductor current and let that diode shut off. Then I'm just as quickly as possible getting to my final operating point. In the turn off transition, that's not necessarily the case. I don't have anything clamping the current and making me stay here. Problem is, if I have nothing other than a high side diode, I don't have anything to take that current until I get to high voltage. Okay. So if I tried to reduce the current through this thing while VDS is still a couple volts, that current has nowhere to go. That changes if I start to consider the impact of capacitance, the drain to source capacitance here. Okay, we're here. Then I've got another pass for that, and I don't necessarily, I have nothing clamping the current through this. I may be able to get this to operate in a trajectory that looks more like this. A much less lossy transition. So think about how I might do that. I'm going to look at simulations for a couple of cases, and then we'll look at some conditions to achieve this. Okay, so first is same simulation, just running the turn-off transition exactly as it was. Still have these same capacitances. I turn around the current source and start it at 10 volts instead of at zero. So I've CGD, CGS, and no CDS, or 1.5 femto of CDS, really small. And I see I get the waveforms as expected. It's flipped of what I had before. Go through the same staircase type VGS waveform. I've got big overlap losses here where I've got simultaneous drain to source voltage and current. And current splits between gate to source capacitor and drain to source capacitor. Okay. Now, in the next slide, what I do is I add some significant CDS, drain to source capacitance, to this device, and otherwise run everything the exact same. Okay. Adding that drain to source capacitance, what it does is as I go through the turn-off transition, because nothing is clamping any kind of voltage or current, when I begin to turn off the device, drain-to-source voltage rises somewhat slowly, limited by inductor current minus however much current is going in the device. As I begin to give up a small amount of current, that voltage begins to rise. But I'm not clamped to stay in active SAT or have any kind of constraints there. So if I drive the gate fast enough, I can keep going, say more or less in the triode region with small voltage until I hit threshold, slightly increased resistance, but with a very small voltage across it, and get the gate completely off before the drain to source voltage has risen above roughly, call it 3 volts here. So instead of having overlap losses, still have some kind of overlap of current and voltage. So I'm talking about a volt and my current is transitioning from 1 amp down to zero instead of 300 volts in 1 amp, significantly reduced. So on this turnoff transition, I can do that. If my gate is significantly faster than the time it takes to charge this drain to source capacitance, I can get the device fully off before the drain to source voltage has risen significantly. Right. If I put much more than 1 amp current in, I could drop this really quickly and I've only risen a few millivolts. Right. This, by the way, is just an artifact that I forgot to delete off before I took this screenshot. This is minus 1 amp. That's the reference. It's nothing. Okay, so what does that look like? going to look at is the two extreme cases and then think about conditions to have this low loss type turnoff transition. Okay. So if my gate is way faster than my drain, I'll have more or less zero loss. If my gate driver is way slower than the speed that my drain is source voltage drives, I'll have full overlap loss. In the middle, it'll become a complex thing. It requires some nonlinear analysis of how it's switching between different operating modes. We're not going to worry about that. We're just going to derive conditions to be in one or the other. So we're always deep into full, what I'll call gate-dominated switching or drain-dominated switching. Okay. So what we want, ideally, that turns off completely before VDS begins to rise. Okay. If I'm able to achieve that, and in my ideal case, if I just tell the set to shut off and it does and it's gone, then the behavior is going to be dominated. Got IL going through the device, and I instantaneously shut it off. That IL will begin going through the CDS capacitance of the device, and the drain to source voltage is going to rise according to IL over CDS. Make sense? So then my dVDS by dt can look like IL over CDS. So I've done a good job, completely shut it off, the device has been cut off. Okay. The alternative case is I'm not able to do this. In the first simulation, either because I have almost no CDS, or otherwise I'm not able to drive the set off fast enough such that it just shuts off instantaneously. Instead, as the voltage is rising, the set's still switching, still in the process of turning off. Okay. In that case, we'll have our other extreme, which is that we're pulling current out of this to try to shut it off, current IG. That current's controlling the dVdt through this CGD capacitance. Here's my set, gate current IG being pulled out of it, and my two capacitances, CGD and CGS. If I look at the extreme where the gate's entirely controlling my dVdt, then I'm going to say I have no CDS. It doesn't matter, like in the first simulation. Okay. Here, when I'm in this interval where the voltage is changing, my gate to source voltage is more or less constant, and I've got a constant current being pulled out of the gate. And as we saw, that current is entirely going up through the CGD capacitance. And that's what's dictating my dVDS dt. Okay. So just KVL around this loop, VDS is VGS plus VDG. VDS, VGS, VDG. During my dVdt interval, VGS is equal to VM is a constant. So the rate at which my VDS rises is going to be equal to the partial of VGS with respect to T, where VGS is a constant. The partial derivative with respect to time is zero during this interval. which is equal to partial derivative of this voltage with respect to time, dv dt, the voltage on a capacitor, is current through it divided by capacitance. That's going to look like Ig over CGD. So I have two different equations here for dvdS dt, how quickly the voltage rises when I shut off this device. To have this nice low loss transition, what I want is for the gate to be significantly faster than the inductor current just charging this capacitance. What that'll allow me to do is shut off the device while it's waiting to charge the CDS, while the inductor current is gradually charging CDS. So if Ig over CGD much greater than IL over CDS, then the overlap during the turn off transition is minimal. If my alligators point the other way, this is much bigger, then I'm going to have full overlap loss, same as during the turn on transition, 1/2 BDC IL T overlap over TF. In the middle, when these two are comparable, both things will be happening at the same time. It'll become a little bit more complex. Otherwise, or let me say if opposite is true. So to examine this, take that same simulation and then run a sweep of different values of CDS. These are arranged such that this is my CDS is about zero, and this is my max CDS, and they're monotonically increasing through these curves. So the green, the case when CDS is zero, but there are really four things I could change to influence this inequality. I picked one, CDS. By changing CDS, if CDS gets bigger, my voltage is going to rise more slowly. If I kept constant CDS but changed IG, the voltage rise rate would be more or less the same, but my shutoff of the gate would change. So not necessarily that you have to switch this slowly, but because I'm increasing CDS increases, the rate at which VDS rises decreases, and eventually that's significantly slower than the time it takes for me to shut off my gate, in which case I no longer see this Miller plateau or any kind of version of it. When I get to where CDS is large enough such that this inequality on the previous slide holds true, my gate just continues dropping linearly all the way down to zero before the voltage begins rising at all. This device never really traverses through the active sat region. Just drops in triode, voltage current down to zero, and the voltage rises afterwards. Okay, this is the log scale of the power loss. Let's see, this case with my max CDS, you know, the voltage rises really slowly and I have a long switching transition. The device is shut off completely, and this is all just an inductor charging a capacitor, really lossless. Questions on that? practically, what are the limitations here? By increasing CDS, I can get this low loss. That's going to give me a really slow switching transition, probably the way I want to influence this inequality. And again, by increasing gate current, right? Just switching faster, changing the gate as quickly as possible. That will, if I make this, you know, near infinity gate current, this inequality always have true and I'll have zero overlap losses on turn off. Simultaneously, during turn on, I'm still going to have overlap losses, but making that gate current really high will make T overlap near zero. I'll still have to calculate this, but it'll approach zero as I switch really fast. So switch as fast as you possibly can. Is there any reason not to do that? Well, there is going to be some limit on the gate current because of internal gate resistance that we looked at before and maximum allowable gate voltage. You take the maximum allowable gate voltage, divide by that resistance, unless you have a really clever circuit to block to save the oxide, that's going to be the maximum current you can drive this thing out without risking damaging it. But even if that's really high, there may be other limitations that affect how fast you're willing to switch these devices. And those really are going to be things like overshoot, ringing, and things like crosstalk, or shoot through losses. We'll just look kind of qualitatively at these two things, make sure everybody's aware of them for the moment. Okay, so the first one, overshoot, ringing, different kind of distortions of these switching waveforms relative to what we've sketched so far. So these really nice, sharp cornered, potentially very fast CVDT waveforms that we've been simulating, possible theoretically when I have nothing but capacitances and current sources. But when you go to a real circuit, I've also got inductances throughout, parasitic inductances. And when I have things like a drain inductance as well as a CDS capacitance, I have a small little resonant tank here. And if I try to push to the limit and switch this thing as fast as I can, I'm saying I want to put a square wave step transient across this. That's going to ring out, potentially cause potentially issues with EMI, but as well overshoot voltage stresses on this device or perhaps the opposite device. In reality, and I think I'll show in a moment, when I go to very fast switching speeds, I'm going to see VDS voltages that don't look like this kind of slew rate limited, but very steep slope. I'm going to see things that look like this, depending on how fast I switch. This ringing could get worse, and this overshoot could eventually be enough to cause a device failure, either one of my power devices, may cause distortions to my loads that cause an issue. So there's going to be limitations there in terms of both interference management, EMI filtering, and in terms of device protection to make sure that overvoltage doesn't damage it. Okay. As I switch slower, I'm applying to this essentially resonant circuit a lower amount of spectral content, got less high frequency content because I slowed the switching edges. I'm also going to force myself to spend more time in the active sat type region where I've got a lossy behavior, which will help to damp out any ringing there, effectively dissipating that energy in the device itself, and I can get lower ringing by forcing myself to switch slower. That's somewhat of an inherent trade-off of this transition may be less lossy, maybe more efficient, but it may blow up my device because of the overvoltage, so I may have to deal with a little bit more switching loss to make sure I don't overvoltage and explode. The other one, crosstalk, is kind of a specific phenomenon related to this. Crosstalk is so named because it's interference in one switching device from the switching of another device. Okay. So we'll look at an example of this with high side device being affected by the low side device turn on. Okay. I'm just going to sketch a couple waveforms here, please, where I'm going to turn on M2. This time, this will be my M2, M1. Label M1 over here. Okay. If I'm looking at the turn on of M2, then M1 is already turned off and is going to remain turned off during the whole turn on transition of M2. So when I look at M1, it's got some gate resistance, RG, and then it's got a gate driver that is trying to short the gate and source together to keep this device off. I have some positive inductor current, and what I've got is one of these bad overlap loss transitions where the inductor current is going up through the body diode. I turn on M2, it's going to pull the voltage down after taking over the current. Okay. If I look at the switch node voltage, the switch is going to be up at VDC. And then sometime after I turn on M2, I go through overlap dynamics. Eventually, this drops down to zero. VGS of the high side device. Everything's working well. This should be clamped to zero during this entire time. It should stay off. I want to look at whether or not I believe that. Let's assume it does, and then examine what happens when I consider the effect of CGD again. So what is the voltage on this capacitance? CGD. Assuming my gate driver does a good job and VGS stays zero, this is shorted. It means VDS is equal to VDG. They're the same thing. VDF in this case of the high side device is just VDC minus V switch. So I should have VDG, which is what I'm drawing here. It should look like this, VDG device one. Okay, is there any problem with that? Well, now I've got a DVDT across this CGD capacitance, which is just as fast as however fast I switch the device. I'm talking about limitations, so I'm assuming doing that quite fast. This is a large DVDT across this capacitance. That's going to result in a current. Goes this way, got a positive DVDT, so a positive current flowing through it. That current's going to come back, drain the gate, and then flow through either this gate resistance in this direction, or I didn't sketch it here, but it can go down through the gate to source capacitance as well. Either way, current flowing this way through RG or current going this way through CGS is going to tend to increase this voltage. What I'm going to see is during this DVDT, my actual VGS is going to see some blip. And this flip here is what we call crosstalk. This guy is sitting up here minding his own business, just trying to stay off. This guy switches way too fast and it distorts the high side gate source according to the low side turn on switching transition. This thing is not trying to switch during this time at all, just trying to remain off. If that blip causes my gate to source voltage to go above threshold, I'm going to have this device turn on during a time where my low side device is in the middle of turning off. I'll have both devices on. There's also a huge amount of current going through this phase leg and a lot of loss. That spike of current is going to be limited only by the parasitic conductances. Generally not something we bother to calculate the losses associated with because it's really bad. And if you have it happening, you got to fix it, not calculate the losses about it. You got to get it to go away. So there are a few ways to remedy this. If you run into a situation where this blip is getting up to threshold or perhaps above it, and those fall into a couple of categories. Remedies for crosstalk. So the first is I can try to decrease the impedance, which is holding this device off. That's decreasing the external gate resistance. If I get to zero and it's still a problem, I can start adding capacitance to try to hold that node, but eventually I'm going to be limited by the internal gate impedance. Let's say decrease RG, where RG is the part of that you have control over, the internal gate resistance. Unless you can fab a new device, you may not be able to control the limitation there. Okay. Second, I can try to reduce this DVDT. So I have less current coming back, and eventually less of a peak in voltage here. To reduce the current, I reduce the DVDT on this capacitance. That DVDT is equal to the DVDT drain to source this device during turn on. Eventually what that's saying is I need to actually turn on this device slower. So I could increase the gate resistance of this device so that it has smaller gate current and turns on more slowly. So there, turn on M2 more slowly. Should be something like increase RG for M2. And to differentiate these two, now I'll, using our old notation, talk about having potentially different resistances in my driver for turn on and turn off. So here, what I really want to do is decrease RGL, whatever the resistance is in the path that's turning off the device. Here I want to increase RGH, whatever the resistance is in the path that is turning this device on. So these aren't actually when they're on different devices. And they're two different paths through the gate driver. High side resistance and low side resistance in that gate driver half bridge. And then final one I'll mention here is simply to change your gate driver configuration such that when the device is off, it has a negative voltage. If I have 3-volt blip here and I've got a 3-volt threshold, that's a problem. If I'm starting from zero, but if I drive it negative with a negative 5-volt VGS, then that same blip will only get me to negative 2 volts and I'm okay. Use negative VGS for turn off. I did that, changed nothing else. I get the exact same blip, but starting from a lower voltage, should keep me well below the threshold, potentially. And so increase my QG losses a little bit. Now I'm driving over a wider voltage range. But maybe worth it if it's my way to get away from crosstalk. Okay. Sorry, I went a little bit over on time. We'll pick up and begin talking about capacitive losses and nonlinear capacitances next class.